Welcome everyone to the Strickland episode of the Caravan Tour of Terror, a show that finds us touring the globe through the medium of horrific, chilling and disturbing entertainment. My name's Donald and I'm the driver on this quest. Joining me at my side, as always, with the road atlas on his lap and wearing a rather fetching dress is my navigator Ali. Say hello, Ali.
Ciao, Donald. Sorry, I'm unsure of the local language.
Well, we're in Berkshire, so...
Oh, God. No wonder people sound so weird.
To visit the birthplace of this episode's focus, one Peter Strickland. I mean, does it look more familiar now?
I mean, it just looks...
You can hear people
like
playing
Italy.
You can hear people playing cricket over the field there. Don't know. Anyway, Mr. Strickland...
I thought when you had said you can hear crickets.
No, the game. Ah. How's that? Mr. Strickland has directed two films that we're going to discuss today, namely Barbadian Sound Studio and In Fabric. So here we are in Berkshire.
Yeah. Berkshire?
I'd say Berkshire. Why are we in Berkshire? He's from Berkshire. So that's fine. That makes sense, right? And we're at the Scotland House campsite. And that name makes me think, I don't know if something horrible's happened here in the past.
Probably.
Two Scots or by Scots.
Probably two Scots. Bad to guess.
So just be on your toes. Stay edgy. Nestled in the rural Berkshire countryside, it offers a little slice of rural peace and relaxation. Isn't that nice?
It's lovely.
I mean, you could, yeah. I mean,
it's lovely.
Lovely. Yeah. And we're not in Italy, all right? Just so you know. Just so everyone knows.
Okay.
Right, good. Okay. So the name, Scotland's House Campsite, has remained a mystery. But Ali, you can solve one mystery for us and tell us a little bit about Barbadian Sound Studio, please.
Well, Barbadian Sound Studio is a 2012 Peter Strickland movie.
That'll do it, will it?
That'll do it, yeah, that's us.
That's everything we need to know.
Written and directed by Peter Strickland, it tells the story of Gilderoy. And Gilderoy is a sound engineer going to work in Italy. It all comes back around, Donald.
Yes. All makes sense.
Yeah, so he's been hired to do sound engineering for a Italian giallo movie, essentially.
It's not a horror film.
A giallo movie.
That's not a horror film. Movies are not horror films.
They're not horror films.
They are true to life. Yeah.
Yes. It's the human experience laid out on film.
Yeah, all that.
But... by women getting murdered.
Yep. So this little, I could say portly about him, right? Yorkshireman.
Sure, he's played by Toby Jones.
Gets headhunted and swept off to somewhere in Italy. I don't know if it's actually ever specified. To work on sound there. And what happens to him?
And
it all goes hunky-dory.
He's basically... He struggles with the language barrier. He struggles with the... like attitude barrier.
Yeah, they're all quite rude and outspoken.
they're all quite Italian and he's quite English. Yeah, so he starts working on just the basics of the sound, and then slowly he gets made to do more and more things. You know, he's doing the Foley work. He's setting up X, Y, and Z, and if he tries to ask or, you know, provide input, the very, very brusque producer shuts him down.
Yeah.
It's very rude to ask questions. just say hello.
Like for money and stuff.
Yeah.
You should be doing this for exposure and the love of the craft.
Yeah. And it's set in the, you know, heyday of the giallo movement of like the 70s.
Yeah.
Basically, things just get weirder and weirder in this sound studio. The scenes that he's doing become more creepy, especially since when he first joined the movie, he thought it was a movie about horses.
Yeah, stupid idiot. Well, it's called The Equestrian Vortex. So, okay, yeah. Maybe that's why. He gets letters from his mother talking about the chiff-chaffs in the garden.
And the magpies.
And he's not really used to all this giallo business.
He's not. But the lovely documentary he did about the British hillsides came through.
Yes, that's what he's usually doing, is just crap for Countryfile, basically. If anyone knows what Countryfile is, it's just, just puff pieces. The start of the film is like opening credits for this film, but then you don't actually see anything about it at all. You only ever see him and other Foley artists mashing lots of veg, cutting veg, stabbing veg, crushing veg, and it simulates all the torture that these witches are being subjected to in like a puritanical scourging of them or whatever. Lots of very disgusting sounds, but all you're seeing is, you know, a watermelon being smooshed up, but it's still, it's quite effectively disgusting, to be fair to it.
Yeah, the majority, if not all, of this movie takes place in one building, essentially.
Yeah, well, his bedroom and the studio. And I,
which I'm still not sure if...
I don't think it is, but I think that was just his losing grip on reality, that they seem to be the same place, basically, towards the end. But I don't think they actually
are. But also someone does visit him at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I imagine he lives close by.
So
it's basically most of it is in this sound studio, and what, the hallways of the building in his
sound studio, hallway, bedroom. Sound studio, hallway, bedsit. That's basically it.
Yep.
And it's the vegetable budget was off the charts, but otherwise, I think it's probably a fairly tight production.
And it's an odd movie. It's one of those odd movies where talking about the plot isn't going to do much in general.
Yeah,
it's a movie where things happen.
It touches on some stuff. I mean, it's a film about horror rather than really being a horror film, really. For people who like horror films, rather than being its own horror film, I would say.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But it gives a lot of that kind of stuff. And then there's touched on some stuff about the pretty bad nature of how women have been treated, both in witch times and also during the 70s when they were making this film.
Yep.
Draw some nice parallels there. There's one particularly gruesome bit of torture, which Gilderoy just can't really bring himself to soundtrack, and my god, it's
just get on with it. You're just paid to do a job. Yes, he receives no sympathy from his boss,
his employers. Yeah, he just so you see him getting slowly more affected by how, because he has to, we see his face watching the scenes and doing the sound effects. We don't see the scenes he's watching, but he's just slowly descends into, he starts to lose his grip on things and he gets very disturbed by it all. He doesn't want to do it anymore. And the film starts to play about with that in interesting ways. The editing starts becoming more disorientating. You're not sure exactly where things are. And he starts to see things or hear things or both. Just starts speaking Italian.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. A lot of ambiguity of what's real and what's not.
Yeah, so it starts off the movie starts off with just a lot of in-depth detail about Foley work also. There's a lot of, you're looking at diagrams for quite a long time. There's quite a lot of good diagram work. It looks very complicated as a business. Quite interesting.
It looks fucking nightmarish of how much you have to record down and...
Yeah.
I suppose it's every sound and a...
Yeah, but surely these days it's not really like that, because he's literally having to, time the stabs exactly right. You wouldn't need to do any of that anymore. The art must be lost these days.
Oh, I don't know. I think the old masters would do it the old ways.
Also, these giallo movies, when we watch them, I mean, they're always entirely dubbed, pretty much, it seems. So that must be a fucking nightmare back in those days for this kind of thing.
But it's not as bad because they're dubbed. You don't have to match up.
Yeah, I know. They were a bit less.
Sounds.
That would have been fucking impossible. But anyway, so it was quite interesting. I think Foley works pretty cool. Most people think Foley works pretty cool, right? Coconuts for horses, that's cool, right? So that all that stuff is pretty cool. And then about three quarters of the way through, it's just like, oh, fuck, we're going to go off the deep end now and just be weird with it. The Chiff Chaffs get murdered in the letter from Mother. It's like, oh,
by the magpies. Oh, it must have been the magpies.
Everything just starts going wrong and a bit gross, and Gilderoy is like, yeah.
And things start going wrong within the production as well. Like, actresses are leaving. The director seems to have, like, no care about what he's actually doing. He's walking into, like, live sessions with his dog and stuff like that. Everyone starts to get on everyone else's nerves. Except for, what was his name?
The Champagne Man. Always, I can't remember.
He always just bursts in, like...
Is he someone's he's someone's nephew or son, isn't he? And he just, he always comes in like, hey, I've got champagne. Hey, I've got cute women. Hey, hey, party, party.
Hey, Belgian chocolates.
Yeah, he's having time of his life. But otherwise, yep, Gilderoy's not. Yeah, and it's quite hard to talk about because it's all so auditory and visual as opposed to really being... much about a story, because like I say, the story just kind of falls away towards the end a bit, but it does other playful things and I liked all those things. I don't really want to spoil all of them, but it's
totally,
you know what I mean, like, I don't want to, if you just describe everything that happens, the Italian thing was pretty funny and he just keeps being dubbed in Italian for the final
most
bit.
Of the rest of the movie. Yeah.
I thought that was quite, I don't know, that was quite cute. Not scary at all.
Not scary at all, no.
But like I say, it's more film for horror fans than about horror, I guess, than... Like, if you liked giallo movies, you should definitely watch this. But I would always say watch a giallo movie before watching this if you've never seen it. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe Don't Torture a Duckling, which we reviewed and recommended. So, this is quite potted discussions. Do you want to talk about any themes? Is there a theme corner, or are we just doing little...
I didn't know if there was as much of a theme corner on this one. You know, horror movies and the treatment of people, not just women, the treatment of people within that environment, especially during its heyday of, there were like popular movies that they wanted to get made relatively cheap. I'm sure there were people that were in the side of, no, but I'm making real art.
Yeah, very delusional.
Yeah, and I feel it's the producer takes a lot of like that to try and just motivate and cheap out. And he basically doesn't want to pay anyone.
Yeah.
There's a great scene between I think it's Elena and Gilderoy, where it's because Gilderoy's basically shown to be like mild-mannered, milquetoast, weak Englishman. You know, very polite, very, oh, I wouldn't want to bother you, but, you know, would be very good if we got paid. and Elena's like, no, if you... He was like, I have demanded it. And she's like, no, you have to be vicious. You have to be, like, you have to properly, like, fight for any little thing you want in this. And that's quite good, where it does show him breaking out of that little milquetoast man. Mm. You know, at one point he swaps over some cables because he thinks it will get a lower sound barrier or sound floor. And, you know, the old cable man is furious about it. And the producer's like, why would you touch these things? and you see him like later on starting to get more of a backbone. There's a really good moment where he's trying to get the money off of the head office, and he picks up the phone and is very like, listen here, I've had enough. Like an Englishman trying to be assertive.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is also the way that being thrust into a foreign situation.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when it's not that, like, when most people go into foreign situations, they're given a very easy, like, introduction to it. Whereas he is just thrust in, especially because it's a job.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's none of this introduction. How's your Italian? It's like they're basically talking Italian around mm-hmm. him all the time, mm-hmm. and then he gets barked orders in English. And even that's like played upon really smartly because. Most of the time through, you know, your first half, 2/3 of the movie, he does not understand Italian.
Mm-hmm.
And then as that sort of falls away, there is moments where you're like, does he know some Italian now?
Yeah.
Like in a completely non, like dreamy sequence, someone says something to him in Italian and he does it immediately,
mm-hmm.
but it's not picked up on. It's not like emphasized. Then the next thing that's said in Italian, he doesn't understand.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it just it starts playing with that really smartly throughout the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Until obviously, as you said, he just wakes up one day and he's like, ciao, bella. Oh.
But he is speaking English. It is just a thing where he's just being dubbed. Weird, you know what I mean? Like his lip movements are still English in that old.
Are they still English?
Yeah, I'm sure they are. You see older scenes as well. That he was speaking English in, and he's now dubbed into Italian.
See, I wasn't sure if he was mouthing Italian and then was dubbed over.
Yeah.
Obviously he wouldn't... Because I wasn't sure if they were going for that, i.e. the giallo part, or the this is a guy who has just started speaking English, Italian, but Toby Jones doesn't know Italian, so he's going to do his best effort on set, and we get someone to dub him.
Ah, right, right. No, well, I think it's because they start playing with, like, the whole, you've always been here, almost.
Aye, yeah.
What do you mean? Flight from where?
It's also a weird movie.
I mean, it starts to, the structure of the film starts to kind of mirror, like, giallo movies. Because a lot of giallo movies weren't particularly literal, didn't really care about being that literal. So... That's why I viewed it as it's getting closer to the giallo movie that he thinks he's making. And it,
yeah.
Like, literally at certain points. And it was all kind of wrapped up with that. But I thought it was quite smart and quite well done. I liked it. I was trying to review it on IMDb and the fucking app wasn't working earlier. So
get on that if you're listening to IMDb.
I'd say, for me, it's an 8, but probably closer to a 7 than a 9. Because I stole that from a YouTuber called Your Movie Sucks. And I like that when you're talking about these out of 10 ratings. Because I find it particularly interesting. So that's why it's bumped up to the 8. Like, I find the subject matter particularly interesting. And I find it quite effective and quite smart. I did quite like it. And I really like Toby Jones. So yeah, I went for 8, I'd say.
He went for 8, he'd say.
I'd say an 8.
Yeah.
Please,
sir.
You've
got to be vicious. You've got to be mean.
And yeah, the Yorkshire stuff was also quite entertaining. Because we watched it together, we were trying to put on our best Yorkshire accents and we were kind of empathising with the poor wee man.
Yeah, play much. Play much.
As my mother would describe him. The poor wee guy. Poor
the
wee soul.
Poor wee man. Poor wee, he has a poor wee soul in that movie. I was similar. I really enjoyed it. I think Toby Jones, as always, gives a fucking excellent performance. But I leaned more towards a 7 than an 8, and it is just because I felt that it's not that I didn't like the ending, and obviously
it's quite abrupt of an ending. I don't think I particularly liked the ending, to be honest.
There are abrupt endings that really work, and then there are some like this one where
it's over.
Oh yeah, right. Like. Ambiguity at the end of your movie can be a good thing.
Yeah.
I don't want everything wrapped up in a neat little bow, especially a movie like this where nothing is quite as it seems. That's relatively impossible, but it was very much all of a sudden, oh, right, your movie's over. I get nothing more?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Like, I felt a wee bit let down at the end.
Yeah, I can't disagree.
But yeah, no, I still enjoyed it. It still... works really well, and it's also 100 minutes, something like that.
Yeah, that's a tight 94 or something. Is my
exactly memory exactly?
I didn't feel bored at all or anything like that. Moved on along a fair clip.
Yeah, yeah.
I would give it 10 more minutes for the ending, for fuck's sake.
I know.
I do agree. It was the ending's not the point. I like it for what it does along the way, and then at the ending, I was like, all right, maybe another watch, you might be like, right, okay, he's doing this, but definitely for first viewing, it was like, oh, okay, all right, cool,
yeah,
lights up, right, leave cinema now, oh, okay, all right,
get out,
okay, sorry, all right, so that was a very quick whistle stop tour of Barbarian Sound Studio. Because as we say, it's not really the kind of film you talk about. We're definitely going to be talking more about In Fabric, because it's longer. There's more things happening in it.
It helps.
In Fabric. Will I give a potted discussion of In Fabric?
Oh, you can try.
I'll try.
Yeah.
So In Fabric is a 2018 horror comedy by Peter Strickland. And it is about a cursed dress and the various owners of said dress. That's it. I did it.
That's it. It's not bad.
Fuck you. The first owner of said dress is Sheila, who's she's a frustrated single mother, recently separated. So she buys the dress with an aim of going out dating again.
Sad is what I wrote. She's sad.
What I said was she's a frustrated, newly separated mother to an infantile dickhead.
Wow.
Her son is a fucking twat the whole film.
I wrote sad divorce bank teller.
Yes. So she buys this dress from this weird department store that is run by this oldish man and these witchy looking women, because they are witchy looking, and they have like, so the, should say, Barbarian Sanctuary was set in the 70s, and this could also be 70s or 80s.
I thought 80s.
Yeah, it could be. I wasn't being too like precious on witch, because I really don't know if it's a good way to tell. But it's this department store, and they advertise late at night, and they're beckoning people to come in and stuff. It's all very, very witchy. Very, very witchy. And there's one like main department store character called Miss Luckmoor. I had to look that up because I didn't know her character name at all. So she's like your through line of the department store goings on. It's all very weird.
She speaks like a weirdo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, everyone in the department store, not just her, the old man as well, they both speak basically in riddles, which goes totally unacknowledged by the other characters who speak normally. It's very my odd.
I do love when Sheila first speaks to Miss Luckmoor.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is how every British person would respond to that. She walks up, gives her a riddle, and she just turns around and goes, just looking, thanks.
I don't mind the way they speak. It's a bit silly, I mean, but it does actually make sense. But it's kind of thing. You kind of have to tune your ears into it to kind of figure out what the fuck they're saying, because it is purposefully supposed to be like that. You get weird people turning up, like Gwendolyn Christie is banging her son.
Yeah.
Older women. Weird,
bitchy goth Brienne.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Character called Gwen, so that's handy. It just takes an instant dislike to Sheila, and vice versa, because I mean, they're basically running around and not respecting Sheila in any way at all. Yep. Either of them,
and they're art students. They're clearly,
he's doing
art.
His A-levels, so I he's don't 17
think, and she's not.
No, she's very mid-20s, so it's all very, oh dear. And
well, I mean, Gwendolyn Christie's 44.
So he does drawings of a drawing of her asshole that is being worshipped like a god by people, and he does a drawing of her vagina, and he's there bowing down to her or something.
I thought it was just him going down on her.
She watches
that happen.
Yeah, which was
for
awful.
Just a little bit too long.
But I like that he liked his drawing so much that he has a tug off.
A tug off, wow. Yeah.
I was gonna say chug, but I think that's too specific.
He masturbates to it.
That's too, yeah.
Excuse me?
It's a wee wank. He's a wee wank.
You're a wee wank.
Anyway, so Sheila buys this dress. It is a unique, one-of-a-kind dress worn by one model who came to an untimely end. And then things start happening around her house. Basically due to the dress, like, it starts turning up in other rooms. She doesn't know why, but she starts getting annoyed at her son, thinking that Gwen is stealing it and trying to wear it or whatever. It shakes the shit out of her washing machine to bits.
Yeah.
Cowering in the corner as the washing machine starts flying bits of shrapnel off itself and stuff like that. there's a lovely scene. I don't know if I really understood what it was trying to say, where Miss Lockmore is cleaning a mannequin with another store worker, and they're sort of having sex with it a bit in terms of caressing it a lot, and then it's got pubes, and mm-hmm. then they start fingering the mannequin pubes, and it's on its period, and then mm-hmm. the old man is having a chug to that.
Yep.
I don't know if you're going to be discussing it in Theme Corner, but I was a bit mystified by that entire segment. So I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on...
I have thoughts on that scene and how that scene plays into the larger...
Good. Movie. I don't know if you want to discuss them now or later. You can leave it to Theme Corner if you want.
Well, I was going to leave it until my review.
Right. Okay. Good. That's fine. We'll leave it there.
Yeah.
Sheila gets a rash on her chest.
Yep.
And she goes out on dates that are... First date's really bad with a total twat. And the second date's a bit better. I can't remember the name of the guy, but they get on a wee bit. And then she...
Zach? I know the first one's called Adonis.
Yeah. Oh, you got them both right. They're out having a walk. She gets mauled by a dog and the dress gets ripped up. But then it's magically okay again. And then it's like outwardly haunting her basically by moving around and stuff like that.
Tries to smother Gwen.
Yeah. There's scenes of it floating around and it's like sometimes it looks good-ish, I think. Like the bit when Gwen is looking up and the dress is there. I think that looks okay. There's other times when it's floating around the house and it just looks really dumb. And I'll get to that later.
I think those moments I feel don't work because the rest of the time it's like shoving itself under doorways. Like literally just like, you know, we're pulling this dress on a string through this.
Yeah.
Like... Yeah,
it's anyway. We'll save discussion of that. We're going to spoil this movie, by the way. So, are we? Yeah, I suppose we are. So, well, okay. So the weird thing about discussing this film is, I feel I'm a bit hit a spoiler, and we're only halfway through. But it's hard not to discuss a film and talk about the first half an hour and then leave it. So we'll just say spoilers from here on out.
Sure,
Kushti. Okay, so. Sheila is driving in her car, nearly hits a mannequin that looks like, you know, the period mannequin, and then gets in a car crash and is dead. That's Sheila Dunn, brown breed.
I mean, I would have just said the dress goes on to a new person. Oh, I could have just...
Brown breed. No, because... Brown breed, deed.
Oh, okay.
You've never heard brown... Oh, well, okay.
It sounded like you said brown breed.
Brown breed. Dress is picked up by the stag party of Reg Speaks. A washing machine repairman, so washing machines have a through line in this film, which is weird.
Yep. Bigger through line than even I thought here at this point in the movie.
And he's forced to wear the dress in a stag. It's all very oi, oi, oi.
Oh, God, it's the fucking worst. It's like my worst nightmare. That's my horror movie right there.
There's a scene where he is stabbing a squash. And I was like, oh, it's like Barbarian Science Studio. That's weird. And there's a scene later with rotten fruit and veg. I actually forgot. We forgot to talk about it. So there's Barbarian Science Studio just accumulates veg and fruit. And it gets more rotten as the film goes on. I think that's pretty, you know, it's pretty on the nose in terms of what's happening kind of thing. So we get more fucking vegetables being stabbed in this film as well. And Reg has a curious ability where he's so boring that he explains how washing machines need to get repaired to people and it puts him into a cross-eyed trance.
Yep.
To the point where, didn't even mention them, Sheila's bank managers.
Yep.
Sheila's managers at the bank she works at are Julian Barrett from The Mighty Boosh and that dude from A Dark Song.
I can't remember. Steve Odom, who is a British comic, but the only thing we know him from is the excellent horror movie that we've watched before.
And their scenes are the most ridiculous and comedic out of anything. It's just pure like satire, ridiculousness dialed up to 11. And at one point, they ask Reg if he would just pretend to be fixing their washing machine so because they could go into this trance.
He's in for he loses his job and he's going in for to get a loan because him and Babs are getting married.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, well, we could sort something out.
But give us a hit.
If you were to help us out with our washing machine repair. It's a weird, like, sexual, not sexual, hypnotic state that they all go into.
Yeah, Reg also goes into it. He starts speaking and he's just...
Yeah, he goes more, like, monotonous and
comatose,
like,
almost. But he's just talking over and over again. It's really strange.
Does it to his wife, does it... it's a weird...
One of the scenes I remember most is... in fact, it is that moment. Reg is talking to them about a dream he had. So the red dress seems to give people bad dreams. It gives Sheila a bad
dream. Sleeping dreams? You mean sleeping dreams?
I don't know why they say sleeping dreams, but anyway.
Sleeping dreams.
So Sheila had a bad dream and so does Reg. Reg's bad dream is Babs is giving birth and their baby is born and it's wearing the red dress. Then it gives them the finger. It's just very...
Yeah. Oh, by the way, the baby is born... explicitly.
From there, so I mean, Babs and Reg are shown like they have a pretty poor relationship in terms of intimacy and things like that.
Don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, bad for you. I mean, I don't really know what else touching other than Reg stays at home, Babs goes to the shop, and then a riot breaks out at the store.
For one, don't fix your own washing machine.
What? Oh, wait, what happened then again?
That's how he gets fired.
That's right, yes, because the store has a... I'm not even going to talk about the policy of the
store. Yeah, right?
But yes, he fixes a washing machine after the red dress shakes the shit out of that one. And then they...
His neighbour grasses him in.
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre. And that's actually something. So there's a weird thing about job
that
reform.
Sounds like a theme corner.
Or are you going into that? Right, okay, right. Well,
I've got music.
Right, cool, continue.
All music for these episodes provided by Michael Maftian. So, yeah, it touches a lot upon bureaucracy, for one thing. The way Sheila, like, is talked to by her bosses, Julian Barrett and Steve Autumn, like, it hits so close to home because there's conversations very similar I've had of, like, oh, the area manager was in and you're doing a great job, but...
But just one little thing.
Your handshake just isn't as welcoming as it could be. And this is what they say to her. And I have genuinely had moments like this.
Yeah.
It's about the, at least from what I see, is a lot of it is about the kind of, you know, bureaucracy of retail and jobs in general.
Yeah.
Obviously fashion being a big part of it. What it can be like for the, you know, what those feelings are for the customer, for the employee, and having to put on this, whatever it may be, whether you are a bank teller having to have a very specific handshake, a machine repair, a washing machine repairman that cannot repair another washing machine, or, you know, a dress seller in a psychopathic cult.
The one I did like was... Sheila waved at the area manager or something.
That's a good one.
And because it's a wave, they felt that the mistress should be really respected the same league as the manager.
It's in their thing. It technically makes her your superior because she's a director's mistress.
Yeah,
we actually have to put it down as insubordination to superior. Oh, it's great.
Yeah. So, yeah, I did actually. That's one of the things I enjoyed most, I think. And most of that is the Julian Barrett, Steve Vorham scenes. There is Reg Speaks has similar stuff with his manager, but it's weird because he only ever hears about his indiscretions via a colleague who tells him to go in and see the boss, and the boss just
who sits there in silence,
just silence and just stares for quite a long time.
It's very well done, but very different.
Yeah. Was that theme corner?
Yeah. Now we don't close it.
Oh, right. Okay. I just don't want to cut you off. I don't know.
So what did you think? How did you feel?
I thought it was quite a slog because I just didn't think, for being a horror comedy, I didn't really get a lot of either out of it, to be honest. And it felt quite, to me, its tone is kind of all over the place because it's like ridiculous. Like, I did laugh a couple times, but I never knew if I was re-laughing at intended things or if I was just laughing because it is almost entirely completely ridiculous. But I don't, that kind of tone doesn't gel with me the same way that Barbarian Sound Studio did. Even though they're both quite similar. They're similar films in a lot of ways. And they are, I mean, I can't, so this movie gets really ridiculous. It's sort of Barbarian Sound Studio. And they're by the same director, but one of them worked for me much more than the other one did. I don't know if it was partly because I had high expectations because I enjoyed Barbarian Sound Studio and this film got very well received by a lot of people. But I don't know, it just never quite hit the comedy aspect of it. It never quite gripped me really at all. It really didn't grip me. And like, it just felt a lot more up its own arsehole than Barbarian Sound Studio did. There was a lot of like, fucking hell, all right. Like, Barbarian Sound Studio, I don't know, they just feel so different for being kind of similar in a lot of ways. I don't know.
That's fair. What would you give in Fabric?
5, probably. 4?
Yeah, no, that's 5 on the side of 4. 5, but a closer to a 4 than a 6.
I mean, it has some bits I like, but it's just, like, Julian Barrett and Steve Oram. It's just like fucking what is this compared to the rest of the film? It just fucking, I don't know, the tone just seemed so weird to me. Like,
for me, it didn't seem like it was a movie that actually knew what it wanted to do.
Yeah,
like there is offbeat British comedy, there is straight up comedy, there is like your Disturbia-esque scenes.
Yeah,
you've got like I feel that its comedy aspects and its horror aspects didn't mesh whatsoever.
Which I think is really weird, considering, I don't know. I just really didn't think it worked. And I really expected it to.
Like, I can see aspects of a really good movie here, but, like, you know, you've got the kind of kitchen sink drama of those 60s movies with Sheila, even with like some of the Reg stuff.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't, it's like a mishmash of different parts that never actually clicked for me. Like you, there were some individual scenes where I really enjoyed the movie.
Yeah.
But overall, it like, I had no idea what it was really trying to do, trying to build to.
Yeah.
Or I knew what it was trying to do. It just didn't really do it as well as I feel it could have got one way or the other.
I really felt like a slog, honestly.
I'd probably be a 5 as well. Yeah.
God, we're awful people.
No,
we're going to get hate mail.
From Peter himself.
How dare you? Yeah, probably. Yeah, because, I mean, you know, a lot of people think he's a fucking genius, so whoops.
Well,
we didn't actually discuss the ending there, and we'll leave it at that. The actual ending. And there are some, like you said it right, there are definitely some parts and moments, but I don't know. It almost felt like it would have worked better as a short or something. I don't know.
As opposed to almost 2 hours.
Yeah. A short that focuses more on one thing or the other, I guess. Even if they made a short about the dress that Sheila buys that's horror, and then a bizarro comedy thing about Reg Speaks, the hypnotizing washing machine repairman, that would genuinely have worked better for me if they were totally separate stories. I might even go a 4. I might be only saying a 5 because I'm like, am I dumb?
No, because I mean, like, there was even things like, what is it? Is it Rubber? It's called.
I've not watched that.
But you know that way, whenever the dress was moving around,
yeah,
there was either this like, oh, it's meant to be like super mysterious and ethereal, like with those like flowy in the middle of the hallway scenes, and then there's ones where it's like this. Like low budget comedy. Oh, we're pulling it under the door. Like those bits itself don't even tie together that well.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's meant to be the same entity. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just didn't. For me, it didn't work. So if you were going to watch other movies, if you were like us and fucking hate Peter Strickland.
I was trying to think of a movie similar that I possibly don't get. So my thought was Beyond the Black Rainbow, which I don't think you've watched, by Panos Cosmatos, because like in Fabric, it's sometimes good, but I found it a bit snoozy. It was a bit of a slog to get through, and I'm not sure if I'm smart enough to appreciate it. So I want to rewatch Beyond the Black Rainbow, although, oh, fucking hell, I'll have to make sure I've had a lot of coffee beforehand and it's not too late at night.
I would, in Fabric, I would actually go to Possum. I feel that they've got similarities in their styles and what they want to put across, but one strips the comedy out and works way better.
There's also Sightseers with Steve
with
Oram.
With Steve Oram, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a comedy horror that works, and it's got weird offbeat sensibilities. It's the same... it's Alice Lowe, who's also in Prevenge.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
all that. No, I think we might have watched Prevenge, I'm not sure. I didn't even remember Sightseers is directed by Ben Wheatley. I forgot about that.
Yes, this was also... produced by Ben Wheatley. In Fabric was executive produced by Ben Wheatley, which I did notice at the start of this. I would say for Barbarian Sound Studio, Richard Ayoade's The Double.
Ah, yeah. Which I've
seen. Really hits. If you liked, it is less horror. It's probably closer to Barbarian Sound Studio in that it is very like psychological mystery drama kind of way, but has that really oppressive feel. It essentially the 80s taken to its extreme, lots of concrete, and has that similar kind of a world where things are just a bit off, and that's just the way they are. You're kind of like Willy Wonka-esque world where this is just how things, like, this is how the world is and everyone just accepts it.
Yeah. Cool. I just saw that Ben Wheatley's directing Meg 2, The Trench, so we're going to have to go watch that.
Yes, I did see that as well.
Did you see The Meg?
No.
Quite the piece of shit. Very fun.
Yes, the only thing I do know is that quite a few people I've talked to that have watched it, the only thing they noted from that movie is the way that Jason Statham says Megalodon.
Ah, the Statham.
He really,
absolutely.
He really hits that those syllables. It's not Megalodon.
Megalodon.
Megalodon. Megalodon.
Two. The Trench. So before Frightfest 2023 comes around.
Yeah.
We should probably try and visit somewhere else, shouldn't we, really? I've not decided where, though.
Well, that's...
I'll think about it. We could go across the channel. Yeah, well, there's a lot of, like, French and German movies that have come out in the last 2 years that...
Is this round two? We're just starting again?
I could do. We could even do an episode on a dark song since you like it so much.
We might do more of a
deep dive.
So yes.
You can bore us all to death with that.
Really? Oh, I geek out on that movie. I love that movie.
Yeah, so that might be rewarding, even though it's a film we've both seen, because we do both like it, you a bit more than me, but still. So we'll think about it.
Yep.
We'll think about it. Would you watch other Peter Strickland films?
No.
Really? Wouldn't? That you've done? Done with them?
I mean, I just watched two and both of them were pretty mediocre. I think I liked one of them more.
You can't say Seven's mediocre.
What I was about to do was caveat it by saying I think my love for Toby Jones and the fact that he puts on excellent performances really helped Barbarian Sound Studio.
So he has... So then his newest one is called Flux Gourmet, which is a black comedy. And it's weirdly, it's about Sonic catering, which is like chefs that are up their own arseholes who do a thing where it's all to do with sound of food. Okay. And it's so weirdly meshing the two just films we just watched into another film. But it is just a black comedy. Ace of Butterfield's in it.
Should we watch Gwendolyn Christie?
Yeah.
Should we do a double bill with the menu?
Yeah, no, that's also weird, isn't it? I don't know which came out first. It was Flux Gourmet. It must have come out first. It was February. It was this time last year. I'd probably watch that. And then see, because...
And then feel even stupider when I'm like that one.
I don't get this one either.
Is that your voice of a stupid person?
No, I'm like Gilderoy.
I don't get one either.
I'm like Gilderoy, and I'm going to the Italian studio, and I don't really... Yeah. I'm totally out of my depth, and I don't know what's going on when I watch these bloody films.
Wait, you never explained
the menstruation.
Yeah, well, that is true. The menstruation was just kind of the epitome of the movie not meshing together. Mm. Like, I enjoyed, and you can either cut this and put it back in or just leave it as it is. Mm, but when that scene came up, I was kind of into this movie. I was like, okay, this is super weird and...
Was that like half an hour, 40 minutes? Very early.
Yeah. Like,
it was halfway through Sheila's story, I would say within
the first half hour.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
And it really...
Was that the left turn into Shitsville?
Yeah, basically. Because while looking back, I can see kind of what it was going for in terms of how it relates to the creepy cult shop. I felt at that moment, I was like, this, what are you doing? Like, and it's long. It's a long scene. It was a left turn into Shitsville for me. Let's call it that.
I wish I had said that now. Slightly more brutal than I meant to sound.
And you're not wrong, though. It really was the moment where I was like, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah, I think that's, yeah. I think that might even be the point where I was also like, later on.
If they put that later on in the movie, it might have worked a bit better. Yeah. But where it is, it just came across as like,
yeah,
what? Fucking weird.
Oh dear. Oh, Peter de Bruges of Variety said, in fact, Flux Gourmet may well send audiences running for the loo or else reaching for the barf bag. Coming about as close to triggering the gag reflex as a film can without actually jamming a finger down your throat. He didn't like it, though. Which is weird, because I would say that could easily have been a positive comment.
Well,
other reviews, you fuck.
I know. Discussing In Fabric.
Jesus.
Reg on Amazon said...
Reg.
Reg.
Wait, Reg speaks.
Yeah. Yeah. Said, rubbish, arty-farty boring.
Yep. I can see it.
Terry said, what was the point? 2 hours. I reached the end of 2 hours and couldn't see the point of any of it. Total waste of time.
I could probably write these. Any AI could probably write these.
Bretonista said, dark, funny, and... seamlessly made.
To the person that would make that pun that would find this funny.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Awesome movie for a laugh, 5 stars.
What? No, that's like, that's someone trying to review like The Hangover or some shit. Sorry. I don't know.
Weirdly, someone wrote on this movie and not Barbarian Sound Studio, amazing film, a beautiful ode to Argento.
Well, it kind of...
I know, but it's also...
Watch that one, hell. Mate.
Yeah. Oddly consuming.
That's also a thing, is that I'm sure this that In Fabric has like 50 references to niche horror movies. Well, I mean, just judging by who made it and the other film we watched, to niche horror films and other films that are that flew over my head. And I'm sure if you got them, you'd be like, oh, yes, I see what he's doing there. But I'm just the point of view of someone who doesn't have a fucking clue about that stuff and didn't like it. So there you go.
Gilderoy's mum said of Barbarian Sound Studio, absolute nonsensical piffle.
Wait.
Whoever thinks this is in any way a good film, I would say has lost touch from reality.
They called themselves Gilderoy's mum?
No.
All right, okay.
They called themselves Miss S. Engelfield.
Right, okay.
Which
okay,
might
okay.
as well be right, okay, Gilderoy's
okay.
mum.
Okay.
Especially with the nonsensical piffle.
Yeah. And the chiff chaffs.
And on those chiff chaffs, we better get this. You were meant to get this caravan serviced. Does it work? Does it drive?
Oh, don't! Come on, man. Wait, is this the shithead producer from the first movie, or is RMI just a horrible downtrodden bank teller?
No,
who's giving
sure
me a round?
I'm just making sure you've got the bloody caravan.
You're not the boss of me.
I'm a tenant in this. Recreational vehicle.
Yeah.
I have my
I'm
rights.
I'm the landlord.
Start it up.
Okay.
We'll settle this dispute off air.
Oh, God. Bye.
Bye.